This is Mark with the Welcome to the Fellowship. It is February 13th, 2009. It's about 11:01 p.m. It's Friday the 13th. Tonight we have a special program, particularly detailing and going about, if my tongue will start working properly, emergency preparedness. What kind of threats there are, what you can do for yourself, and how to basically make it easier for yourself when you come to prepare. I have four experts on the line. I will introduce first, Osage. Are you there?
I'm here, but I hardly feel like an expert.
Well, Osage does a lot with food storage and for emergency preparations, food storage, and is a combat medic with the military. I won't say what branch of the military. Then we have Pied Piper.
Hi there, how are you?
Pied Piper details with a lot of emergency stuff as well. She's given lectures on it, and she is an attorney. We have Homana. Homana,
are
you there?
How are you? Yes, good evening.
Homana is an if I remember correctly, you're an emergency room physician, sir?
Was, and then went to family practice after that.
Okay. Then we have Paul T. Martin, who is an attorney in Texas, who also has dealt with business continuation practices and other emergency preparedness. Hello, Paul.
How are you, sir?
Doing good. We're going to do a little brief overview, and we will talk about a few things, and then we will open up the phone lines to anybody who would like to call in. First, I'd say, Piper, what are the areas you think that we currently need to prepare for? What type of threats are there out there for us?
We have a whole host of issues, and it really ranges from, potential severe threats to fairly minor things. The key is to understand that what you want to do is create a toolbox full of aids that help you plan for, deal with, respond to risks that you and your family might face. So as you're asking, the first question is, what risks do you face? And as you go through the list, you want to kind of ask yourself, how likely is it that each of these could happen? What would be the impact on you and your family if something did occur? What can you do to avoid it? And if you can't avoid it, what can you do to limit the impact or at least improve your chances of getting through it okay? The obvious first one is storms, weather conditions. You've got everything from hurricanes and tornadoes. You know, we had a windstorm come through here just a couple of days ago, 60-mile-an-hour winds, ice storms, blizzards. I live near the river. We have floods here on a regular basis, a 100-year flood that occurs about 4 or 5 times in the last 6 years. The big one everyone's looking at right now, obviously, is economic downturn. Job losses abound, and that's going to have a cascading effect. A lot of people are going to have to do a lot of different things now to deal with the economic issues we're facing. Obviously, also, we're looking at terrorism. You hear that drumbeat every day. Something some people don't really think about is serious illness. Serious illness can have a tremendous impact on your family. Flu, and of course, some people have heard about pandemic. If one ever occurred, that would be a widespread one. But even small things like family stressors can have a huge impact on preparing yourselves for them. Things like divorce, death in the family. If you got in a legal entanglement, if you have a family member with special needs, you might have a war situation that will impact your family. Do you have a member of your family currently forward deployed? A lot of Americans are dealing with just that, How do you have a family where your key breadwinner is halfway around the world? So these are things you want to deal with. And then you have other little things like, a fire. We had a fire on the mountain I live on a couple of years back. It took 7 days to put out. What happens if you have to evacuate? That's just a sampling of the kinds of things you want to think about in preparing for just general things that could go wrong.
Okay. Paul, going along those lines, if you were a business owner and you were faced with some of these situations, what strategies would you have to alleviate some of the problems if you could not eliminate them?
Yeah, let me add two things to her list that businesses face. One is, and it gets a lot of media play, and that's, of course, workplace violence. That is something that a lot of companies are spending more and more time stressing and preparing for, simply because not just from the impact to your employees, but it's also bad PR for your company. Even though your company may not have done anything wrong, it's certainly not good PR to turn on the television and see that your company, particularly your national company like the one I work for, has a workplace violence incident. That's one big thing. The other thing is, and it primarily pertains to companies who do business in towns along the border, the Mexican border, and that is the escalating violence we're seeing in some of the border towns. We do a lot of business in El Paso, which, of course, is right across the border from Juarez, Mexico. They are killing people for sport in Juarez, and I don't say that lightly. The violence that's taking place there is dramatic. And so the strategies that that we implement are pretty much twofold. One is awareness. Most people can turn on the news and see what the problems are, but, for example, today we had a meeting at work talking about how to make people more aware of the potential problems and how they does impact our operations. And the second thing is training. Most companies are just now getting to the point where preparedness training for various things, from anything as mundane as a power outage due to a construction accident where a line gets clipped and shuts down business operations, to a workplace violence incident, a severe weather incident, or even a pandemic. And so companies are starting to spend more time and resources preparing for those. So once you make your people aware of those threats and start to have that dialogue and start the training, generally what we have found is that people are, they may not get over the fear of it, but they feel more confident that their company will survive and that their jobs and their own economic security, particularly in these times, will flourish as well.
Okay. Going along that, I'm going to flip over to Osage. Osage, hearing all this and knowing the current economic situation as it is going on, one of your specialties is food storage. What areas of food storage would you normally look upon going into something with the current economic and political situation that's going on currently?
Well, one of the nice things, I guess you would say, about doing this preparedness lifestyle is that once you begin to evaluate the threats and then you begin to evaluate your countermeasures, you find that countermeasures overlap tremendously. For example, if I'm preparing for a hurricane or an ice storm, heaven help us, Dallas is a good example of a place that has a good chance of getting significant effects from both, you realize that that food preparation, as well as a lot of other issues, alternative power, personal protection, the countermeasures then overlap very well. I can prepare, if I have easy to prepare food that will get me through an ice storm, I also have easy to prepare food that will get me through a hurricane. And so these overlapping uses of your preparations really do help you out, because it then begins to allow you to simplify your responses. Now, the type of things that you would do, one of the biggest things, I think, and I've tried to get people to prepare for years, is a simple 3 to 5 day kit of food. stuff that takes little or no preparation, but still tastes good, tastes good enough that you'll go ahead and eat it. You follow that by a supply lasting anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months, that's up to your budget and interest, of fairly normal type of foods, wet canned foods like normal green beans or corn or things that you eat on a very, very routine basis day to day. And then follow that up as you begin to prepare for longer term emergencies with stuff you can afford, which tends to be rather simple food, but stuff that stores very well for some of the stuff many decades.
Okay. So what you're saying is you're taking it gradually as you like the first 6 weeks, and then you would step it up further along as you would go. Is that correct?
That's right. The first group, Red Cross, FEMA, calls it a 72-hour kit. It takes little or no work because you're going to be extremely busy the first 24 hours to 4 days or 5 days. Then you step it up to stuff that takes more energy to prepare, both the energy to heat it and the work necessary for you to do it. And that sort of stuff, you really want to have several weeks worth once you build up to that point. The longer term stuff is a matter of how much you can afford. If somebody can afford freezers and frozen meat and flash frozen vegetables for 3 years and keep it frozen, so much the better for them. But most of us can't afford that, and so you have to step back into affordability there.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to move over to Hamana now. Wendy, or Piper, had mentioned about illnesses, also with a family member dying. In your experience, are there any particular areas basically center your attentions on to ease that possible situation of either a short or long-term illness or death?
Yes. They've covered it very well, and the thing to remember is common things happen commonly, and uncommon things happen uncommonly. So when you prepare, you don't prepare for a sudden ice age to happen in southern Georgia or Alabama. So you don't need to be bundling in Antarctic gear. What you need to prepare for is what Osage is talking about, food to get you through hard times. Disability is by far more common in adults than death. Statistically, and it has a devastating effect on families. I've seen families lose their houses, their property. I've seen families just, like I said, just totally devastated by it. And a lot of it could have been avoided if they had thought ahead and put aside food, had a pantry available for them so that they had things and didn't have a money crunch and were out of debt, when the injury came, or had minimal debt. Recognize that insurance companies are not your friends.
That's one of the major